All right, so this is our third lesson. Isn't that awesome? I'm sure you are finding so many different pieces of your identity now because of all the components you've been digging into, especially the pieces of how you see yourself, how you see your identities, how you see different components of who you are within yourself and so on. I think this is really important that we're putting it all together at some point. So we're not quite there yet, but we will get there. And when we will get there, you will be amazed how it all works together. So this lesson is about excuses and about decisions. We'll start from the part that I've been getting a lot of questions about. So I'll clarify in case this is something that you guys need as a clarification, and if you need any help, we can do that too, but we also have other areas. So in your abundance contract, I wrote for each of your types something that is a short sentence that you can look at and see within that parts of it that you find easy and parts of it that you don't. So this has been bringing up for some reason a lot of questions. It's in your cards for each type. The cards are something you print out from the lesson one in the personality types section where the little clickable squares and you click on the ones that are your three types, you print out those cards, and then on the bottom, first page, left corner, next to the picture is your abundance contract. Obviously, it's a simplified version, and I understand I can't make it perfect for every person, but I try to generalize enough to fit the flavor of each type. So this is the part that was in your homework that a lot of the questions you were asking, like, how do I find it? What is it? That's what it is. So to give you an example, for an alchemist, it's to transform ideas into financial success. So you can see that for somebody, it might be easier to transform ideas. They do that naturally, but the financial success part might be harder. So that's more of what I was talking about. Or let's say for a connector, it's to empower financial independence through the value of relationships. So again, you can see how it might be that, let's say, something like the value of relationship part would be easy because you naturally there, right? You're as a connector, that would be automatic. But the financial success empowerment part might be harder. So let's do something else. Nurturer, to care for others by empowering oneself. That should be pretty obvious, right? Because to care for others, most nurturers here who were in a negative using it, obviously that's the easy part. But the empowering oneself, that would be the harder part. So that's what I was talking about, that in each contract, there is something that is kind of the easier part and kind of the harder part. And we meant to look at both sides. So for, let's see who else, I'll do ruler. To innovate, achieve, and empower wealth with grace and ease. That's an obvious one, that achieving wealth should be pretty easy for the ruler or achieving anything, but grace and ease usually is the harder part. So you can see the combinations within yourself. And since you are a combination of three of those contracts, you can easily see that, oh, these three portions of three contracts are easy and these three portions of three contracts are hard for me. So that's something to look into and notice in your life where you're backpedaling from implementing those pieces, the harder ones, okay? So that's why we want that component. So I hope I answered that question. Wave at me if somebody's still unclear, because that part, I got so many of you asking me. So if I see any hands, I'll stop. Otherwise, I'll keep going, okay? Not seeing any hands yet. Not seeing any hands. Alexandra, I see you. Okay, go.
Yeah, so the cards are on the first, they're from the first assignment.
Yeah, in the lesson one, if you go to the video that's called Personality Types.
Okay.
And then you scroll under the video, I believe, I have little cards like squares with pictures and names. They are clickable.
Okay.
So when you click on it, the PDF shows up and you can download that.
Okay, great.
Thank you. For each. Okay. Yeah, that's where that information is. It's from the lesson one. Any other hands? This is easy. Okay, awesome. So that's, I just wanted to get that out of the way because that's important, because this is the piece that I think we were unclear about somehow that got lost in translation. All right, so excuses. This is something that I think if you really notice how much of that is going on in a lifetime, it's incredibly empowering, because you then can change your behavior by changing the whole chain, your identity. So excuse is something that comes in to justify your incorrect belief. Okay, so when we have a negative identity, like one of the challenging parts of your types that you're standing in, that you're figuring out that's not working out for you, and within that negative identity there will be some sort of a story, right? So the excuse, it's a means to justify the story. Why do we human beings create those things? Well, because the stories are from the freaking childhood. I mean, we created them when we were like yay high. So that means since then, our logical, reasonable mind would have noticed how many things don't fit into our story, how not true our story is. I mean, we're reasonable beings with pretty much, if your mental faculties are great, you're going to notice that whatever your life was at 5 years old did change. So excuses are the means that we create over the course of the lifetime to justify those stories. That's how the lower self keeps us within the incorrect identity, okay? So that's an important part to understand, that the excuse has a reason for existence. It's not just like, oh, I'm being lazy. That in itself is an excuse, by the way, because it's an avoidance. So anytime there is an excuse, we need to, first of all, recognize that it is an excuse, not reality. And second, look for what is it protecting. Excuse is always protecting or justifying a story that is not beneficial for us, or we wouldn't have an excuse. Okay, so that's why we want to know about the excuses. Not because we want to be mean to ourselves and say, oh, so many things are wrong with me. Oh, everything in my life is an excuse. Not everything, but if our story is not quite fitting into the current life, it becomes harder and harder for the lower self to keep us within the smaller story from the childhood. And the harder it is, the more excuses there will be. You know, like, let's say if somebody is shown how valuable he or she is, people constantly commenting, people are grateful. If they have a business, people maybe want to pay them more money and whatever. And the person always says, oh, no, oh, no, it's nothing. It's just, no, it's not a big deal. It's whatever. That's an excuse that's playing in there in order to create the self-fulfilling prophecy of, I'm not that special, I'm not good enough, or receiving is dangerous, or whatever else that person would have. Usually that's a nurturer's negative story. So you can see how excuse here is a essential component of transmuting your negative identity into something that you will become as the positive one. Another thing that you probably have noticed is that there's only one negative identity, not 20 different kinds. This is something that I've been seeing in a group circulating a lot, like, oh my God, there's so many identities, there's so many identities. And it's actually, there are many sub-identities that are relevant to specific stories of your life. So let's say this particular issue might be with relationship, and then there will be a faucet of that identity, like a side sub-identity. Then there will be another one with the business. There will be another one with a family, maybe. There would be another one with health, maybe. And so on, maybe with different people. Like, you might have a different one with your brother than with your mother, or with your coworker versus your lover. So, or with your pet, different story. So all those things kind of go to the same point. So the way Solar Console talks about it, it's like a pyramid. So the apex of the pyramid is the identity. Then underneath that would be the stories that support the identity. And underneath that would be your thoughts, your emotions, and then your reality. That's the foundation of your pyramid. So if you raise that capstone one little bit, that's where little sub-identities live. they kind of still all fit into that one capstone. They're not separate personalities. If you notice, let's say, if one identity was, I'm only loved if I do this. Another one was, I need to do this in order to be loved. Another one is, they will love me if I do that, and so on. Well, then the capstone would probably be, I'm not lovable or something like that. And that would be the actual identity. So these are the negative identities, and then all the sub-identities that we kind of grow them throughout a lifetime. So the key here, and why I wanted you to do all those chains, so many of you broadcast chains again and again for different circumstances, is so that you start to track that there is a similarity. First of all, it's just a great skill to have, because you need to be able to do that all the time, to be able to understand those chains within anything. Anytime you're having experience you don't like, may that be physical, external, or emotional, internal, I feel sad, I feel bad, I feel unhappy for whatever reason, I don't know, just climate change and suddenly I feel sad. All those things are linked to some broadcast and some identity. So we need to learn what it is, because there's really no reason for us to not be happy all the time. Joy is actually a vibration that exists in the universe all the time. Joy is just, it just is. Joy is something that vibrates as a frequency of the universe all the time. It exists. And we can choose to tune into it or not. When we tune into it, we feel joy, but we can feel it simultaneously to whatever else is going on in our life. It's not a thing that cancels out whatever's happening in our life. It's a combination of joy plus whatever we're feeling. But we can have joy all the time, which then makes what we actually are experiencing a little bit less. So there is an experiencer and observer. So the one who's viewing it is the one that's having joy. The one that is experiencing could have experience of joy or other things simultaneously with joy, okay? So when we are in this type of energy, we end up balancing who we are more harmoniously, and that it allows us to step into that new identity with much more ease, okay? So that's why it's important to understand that one type of an identity that happens sort of to be the capstone for us that is negative, because that is the root of all the things we're having, and why we need to understand our broadcast chains, because all the roads lead back to that identity. Once you do it enough times, it's really not an issue anymore. You wouldn't need to be digging for it. It would just be like, oh, here I am again, not being good enough. Oh, here I am dismissing my uniqueness again. Oh, here I am not having a clear boundary again and thinking I'm supposed to rescue everybody. So whatever your one core thing is, chances are everything will go there. So then it becomes easier to adjust, because you're not trying to adjust 200 different things. You're adjusting only one thing, whatever that one thing that you figure out it is, okay? That's why it's important. The key here is you need to make it applicable to your life. This is not a conceptual exercise. This is something that actually needs to apply. Like literally, you got up in the morning and you feel angry. Okay, why do you feel angry? Well, I feel angry because I have to do this thing and I don't want to do this thing. Okay, stop right there. What are you broadcasting for you to have the experience of anger? Because the anger in relationship to the thing you need to do, that's a story. There would have had to be a belief behind that story in order to generate anger in the morning. Or let's say you're driving somewhere and, I don't know, you see sun setting or something, or it's cloudy and you start to feel so sad and melancholic. And then you come home and you don't really want to work out. And then you just feel like having, I don't know, too much alcohol or something. So look at what was the story, but also what was the identity that caused that. So that's a feeling type of an experience that still is a broadcast that generated by a particular identity. We need to make this very much applicable. And that's where excuses come into play, because we always end up with justification for the story. So in order to actually track your broadcast with more clarity, first we need to let go of the excuses that justify the broadcast. Make sense? Do this so I know it makes sense. Okay. Awesome. So in your homework somewhere, I don't remember which page it was, you have, I cannot blank because blank. I cannot work out today because it's raining and I'm sad. Or I cannot sell my products for a higher fee because people won't buy it. Or I cannot have a relationship that works because people will always leave me in the end. Or I cannot have a support in my family because they selfish. Like whatever it is, there always a story there. That thing is an excuse justifying the story. If you look at enough of those, you will find there is a flavor, a similarity. You will definitely find there is a flavor. It's not 20, 100,000 different excuses. It's actually a particular type of an excuse that always has like a default pattern because it's justifying really one particular story, not 20 different stories. So it's something that you want to track in order to understand what is going on in your life. Everything in our life is created by us. Nothing here just happened to you. Nothing is just, oh, it's karma. Oh, my life is just this way. Even karma didn't happen to you. We created it. Every single thing in our life is because we put it there. And the good news is, which we'll get to in a moment with a decision, is that we can change that. So before we get there, I want you guys to look at what flavor have you noticed within your particular excuses. When we do those, I cannot because, think about like main areas of your life. Let's say your health, your relationship of whatever kind you're having, children, family, husband, wife, whatever, your job or business, and let's say money in itself, and maybe it's spiritual. In all those areas, what is the I cannot because? There's got to be a similarity. It's not going to be five different stories. So who would like to share? So then we'll see, maybe I can demonstrate it on somebody. Somebody who has not spoken before. I'd like some new voices here. So wave at me if you would like to speak up. Victoria.
Yes.
Don't see you, but I think you're unmuted.
Yeah, you unmuted me.
Yeah, there you are. Okay.
Okay. So when I was going through these ones, I was writing what I desire and then the excuses that were coming up. And the flavor that I see is like, and I think the identities, I'm not safe, but the excuses are, it's like I'm not trustworthy, that I'm careless, that I am, there is many stories about it, but mm-hmm. that I am not, it's not safe to be me. That's kind of the identity that is coming. But then I have all these like feeling that I'm careless, so I cannot be safe because of that. I cannot be trust with money because of that. And I cannot be trust to have fulfilling relationships because of not that. Mm-hmm. So it kind of feels like all these ends up being that story.
So the identity here, you're kind of looping it into I'm not trustworthy, right? Mm-hmm. That's actually a story. That's still a belief.
Yes.
Okay. So if you go further up to the actual I am-ness of that negative self, what would that be?
What I find is it's not safe to be me.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't trust myself.
Is that another story?
I don't trust myself. I'm not trustworthy. And then it's not safe to show up as me. Being me is not safe. So it's almost like it's a story, but in the identity there is, I'm not safe by being me. So that's a interesting thing that all excuses will point to that, right? So when
yes.
you were doing the positive identity, like something else to step into. What did you come up with that would simplify this process for you?
That's that's where I think I was doing what you were saying. I created a lot of sub identities because I really resonated with last time you were saying that one of your identities was I know. So that's one that feels very strongly for me. But I think it's more like it's safe to know. And so I go back to so it's safe to be me. That's like the most simple one, but that has a lot of, it opens a can of worms. It's very interesting how much resistance there is to that.
Well, you are on the right path. So there are different words to say the same thing, and you might be coming up with many different variations of that as you go through the weeks, but this is definitely great. Like you got the overall idea that, oh, I'm changing into that. That I'm unique and I know something and it's okay that I know and it's safe to be me. That's kind of where you're driving all of that into. Mm-hmm. So how you word that would be depending on, you know, you. But does it help if you do it in your language? What is it? Is it Spanish or is it some other version?
Spanish, yes.
Spanish? Yeah. Would that help you if it's done in that language? Because sometimes our brain perceives it better in a different language if it's a native language or not.
I can try, but I haven't felt the need to
okay.
to write in
yeah,
Spanish.
I'm just a
I would have to
translate out there. Yeah. It's not necessarily better, but like I know for me, Russian and English, they're two separate pathways in my head. So if I write, let's say, something in English and I write something in Russian, it's almost like two different people write it. So because of it, I would use it very differently depending on what I'm internally creating. If I'm working with something from my childhood, I would use Russian. Because that's where the pain is versus the English, which is different me essentially. So that's why I'm saying that sometimes that makes a difference, but maybe it's not, maybe it doesn't for you. Well, good.
Yeah, the other piece I was looking through all the contracts from, I'm an accumulator, not a rare ruler. And I could see that there is like the war power and power is in all of them. And I think that has to do with that. It's like that power coming from safety, where I've been looking for power somewhere else. I don't know. There is something
right.
about that.
Right, and it's not that you're looking for power. You have power. You have plenty of power. But you refuse to claim it as it's mine. So that would be like, I know. That's a claiming it. Owning it. You refuse to do that because you taught yourself that if you claim it, you're not safe. So kind of like I have power, but it's over there somewhere. You know, I'm over here, but you know, I'm just me, but power is over there. And then it translates it to I'm not trustworthy. See, but there is almost like a part of you being out of integrity with you by rejecting your own power, which then makes sense why your personality would label that somewhere subconsciously as not trustworthy. Which actually you're a very trustworthy person. So do you see where the hook is in there?
Yeah, because it's with myself. I'm out of integrity with myself.
Right. Right.
And then I will use and then all the other words I've been writing in the excuses, fickle and careless, and all of these are just a reflection of that out of integrity there. Where I'm doing something else that has nothing to do with my own power.
Exactly. Exactly. The solution for you is essentially to own your power or to know that's the form of power. That would be the new identity to step into. So for this exercise, I'm not going to go into new identities yet, but I'm going to go further with the excuse part. But this is good. You got that. Good job, Victoria.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Let's see somebody else waving at me who is not speaking from before. Come on, be brave. I don't bite. Liz, okay, you go. I'm gonna unmute you. Hold on, it's slow on my end. There, go.
So the theme I came up with is I'm not good enough, but that also feels like a story. So then I come to I'm not lovable, which feels like it ties into the nurturer of like remembering to nurture myself.
Yeah, I would say it's a conditionally lovable. It translates it like the negative story is not that you're not lovable, it's I'm lovable if.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the if is probably the story as if I achieve and if I give. You know, if I'm somebody who's taking care of others and achieving, then I deserve love. But if I'm not doing that, well, then I'm a bad person, I don't deserve love. So it's a conditionality component in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I can feel it like mm-hmm. viscerally.
Right.
So yeah.
So what was your new identity that you come up with to kind of step away from this one and into a different one?
I don't recall seeing that on the homework.
Well, think of it like, like everything that you're dealing with that has to do with the nurturer negative. I think that's your ankle biter, right?
No, actually Maverick is my ankle biter.
Oh, okay. Isn't that interesting? Because that's the part that says, well, I'm going to achieve anyway. You're going to see how much I'm going to make it happen, even if you step on yourself to do it.
Right.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's what I had made that comment, that I resonate much more with the ruler and the maverick and not mm-hmm. so much the nurturer. Like I feel like I'm still sorting out my relationship with the nurturer part.
Yeah, the overgiving conditional to then becoming lovable. So the solution to that is the boundary, right?
Yeah, right.
And being a leader. So you can then twist that into the new identity could be I am safe to have boundary, or I'm a boundaried leader, which then will include the ruler as well, and, you know, healthy nurturer. It's safe to care with a boundary.
Yeah, right. You know, right.
Like to incorporate the boundary piece in there in order to create that experience you're looking for where it's not conditional anymore, your love ability.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that makes me feel like it's safer to move forward now. Because before it just felt like it felt scary to move forward because it felt like it was just going to be so draining that.
Well, and yeah, you have the story in there that, I mean, two sides. You have to achieve in order to be loved, which means you're going to drain yourself and kill yourself and run into a wall, but just make it happen and then be miserable doing it, but supposedly earn love, right?
Yep.
Or you're going to overgive everything and same story, but from the more feminine version.
Yeah, right.
So, but if you're loved anyway, achieve or don't achieve, succeed or don't succeed, and try again. What a freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. A boundary uh-huh. leader.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good.
All right. You got Thank it. You.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. More hands waving at me. Let's do Shannon. You're not, there you are. Now you're okay. Muted.
So the overall flavor is really that I don't know how, I can't do it, I'm stuck. And so it goes back to that overriding capstone of I'm not really smart enough to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I can make all kinds of stories and excuses, but at the end of the day, that is the overriding sensation I have.
Mm-hmm. Feeling. So what can you do in your life to recognize that that is a excuse, as in not real, made up illusion to keep the other illusion in place?
Yeah.
What can you do?
Well, when we did our new identity, I was the vibrant being who was excited about learning new things and accomplishing new skills and moving forward in new ways. So that feels much better to me, obviously, than mm-hmm. being stuck in a very depleted space.
Yeah, and remember, stuck is also an illusion. So right. All of you who get into unstuck, No such thing, no, because we're eternally connected to oneness and universal intelligence, and we are full of resources. We are resourceful. So stuckness doesn't exist. It's an excuse that we play on ourselves. So this is good, because then it gives you a clue, Shannon, to notice, oh, when this happens, that means it's not real.
That's like a star. Oh, that's an excuse place. I need to look at this
exactly
more closely. Yeah.
Exactly.
Great.
Make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Let's see more waving hands. Christina.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hi.
Go. Hi. Hi.
I'm sort of confused, but I think that my capstone story is that I am loved when I'm taking care of others, or I am the nurturer really resonates with me, of rescuing others.
Mm-hmm. What is your first one? Is it a nurturer?
Nurturer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so totally like focusing on myself seems like being bad, you know, it's immoral to do that.
And that's a very tricky story, because that essentially says that my value is in helping others.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But do you see how much of a problem that is? That's not even, I'm only lovable if I help others. That's like, literally, I don't have a value unless I help others.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big story there of self erasure. Yeah. That's the martyrdom that nurturers get into.
Yeah.
Karmic pattern of self sacrifice for the good of all that only keeps everybody stuck and in a victim mode, doesn't really help anybody, but we think we're doing good. So that's a Pleiadian karmic pattern, by the way. So you just hit into the like big origin.
Can I just ask, out of curiosity, how does it work out so conveniently that like your parents just give you the perfect situations to act that out? Like my father basically raised me in a bar, and I was like 5 years old, and he'd say, go talk to so-and-so and cheer him up. Like my job was to cheer up these lonely old drunk men to, you know, it's like weird, just layer after layer
that's my role. Soul contract comes in, Christina. That's the soul contract. Remember somewhere in the videos, I think it's the lesson 3, first video, I talked about a soul contract. So that's something when we choose the incarnation parameters prior to the incarnation. Now, in order to choose the parameters, there are two things. One is the gift, one is the karma that we take in there. So both have to be considered, which means we're going to get parents or people around us in a closed circle that's going to trigger the hell out of us in a particular way to activate our karmic mess. We're also going to get usually one or two supporter people that's going to activate our gifts, or at least remind us we have them so we don't completely drown, because otherwise karma can be too heavy. So depending on a lifetime, some people have more supporters and less triggers. Some people have a lot of triggers and pretty dark lifetime, but one supporter. But there's always kind of both sides. But it's a pre-chosen by the soul. Personality doesn't know about it. So from the personality side, it looks like, oh my God, my parents are perfectly fitting this issue. Of course they are, because you chose them. I know. Okay. Decisions.
I know.
I bet now you're thinking, can I rethink that?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, and it just went on and on and on and on and on. So, yeah. So what's the next question?
Well, those are all stories. Everything you brought up, those are stories. And the thing with you is that you get stuck in the emotion of the story. And this is not just Christina. That's why I'm going to teach from that, because there's so many people here that relate if you more on the magnetic side. So remember, there's identity, then there's the story, then there's the thought, emotion, and reality external. So electrical people tend to get stuck in the thought part to support the story. Magnetic people tend to get stuck in the emotion part to support the story.
Okay.
But when we're in the emotion, it feels so real, there's almost an addiction to keep feeling it, even if it's bad, even if you don't like it. But there's something about wanting to go over and over and over That's kind of like chewing on the same thing and it's not actually being digested. You just keep, you know, essentially recycling it within yourself. That's how we create an excuse on the magnetic side. Mental excuses are kind of more literal. You usually can track them. Emotional excuses, a lot of times it's just, I'm sitting in a feeling. I just feel like this. And I just feel like this. And a person will sit and sit and sit. And from the outside, it's like it makes no sense, right? The issue already passed. But the emotion just feels so, well, addictive is the only word I can think of it. There's like negative pleasure inside the emotion. And that's the loop that then maintains, because, you know, emotion is chemical, right? So it's in the brain. So that means think how many times you have gone through that story, Christina, in your life. Many, right? Like from birth. Yeah. And every time you did, you created the neuron pathway within your brain. And that pathway got again and again and again activated. Then you created a hormonal response to create excuses to keep feeding that pathway, because that's how we, the excuses work, right? They keep us on the path of the story. So then after a while, it almost becomes weirdly pleasurable to stay in the story, because emotion, even if it's negative, feels kind of good because it still releases the hormonal response. It's like a scratch, you know, if something itches and you scratch it, there's a relief, even though it doesn't actually fix anything. So that's the component of the nurturer there, is that leadership and a boundary is the only solution to this story. Otherwise, the stories will always feel stronger and bigger. But if you're boundaried and if you're a leader, no story can touch you. Because then you have the whole power of the heart of the nurturer that cares. Nurturers care so much. But that caring has to be in a way that self receives, right? That's the universal oneness. And when we have a contract to clean up a lot of the victimizer part, we always end up in the field of a victim first, because you can't clean out victimizer without being within the victim-victimizer field. So that means you took on the victim side, you could have took on the victimizer side and then woke up within that too. I mean, it's possible both ways. But anytime we work with that field, both somehow are active within us.
Yeah. So it was probably because I didn't have a boundary that I attracted like so much weird, like sexual abuse, like from very young age with strangers and swimming pool. You know, it's just like, that wasn't in my family, but it was like perpetually coming at me.
Yeah, it's actually, it starts as the karmic pattern, Christina. So karmic pattern is as in you tried in a previous lifetime, didn't get resolved, got dragged around into this one. But then when you come into a lifetime, if within the lifetime we don't change that, that's the decision part. If we don't say like, wait a minute, I deserve more than this. This is not right. I'm not just food for somebody. I have a line here. And you know where that internal thing happens, right? I mean, everybody feels that inner thing when we know that's wrong. But if we override it and do it anyway, or allow something to happen to us anyway, that's the excuse pattern starting to play itself. And yes, it could be from practically birth. It's not a conscious thing, obviously. I'm not saying you're doing it consciously. But now that you understand it, you can consciously choose something completely different. Make sense?
Yeah. What didn't make sense is why leadership is the cure.
Leadership is the cure because victim-victimizer are two polarities, and the third point is needed to resolve that. And leadership is the third point. Then you're not powering over and you're not powering under. You're directionally moving on.
Okay, thank you.
I know, it's a tricky part, but if nurturer is not leading, nurturer will drown in the pain of the world. It's almost like leadership energy is what keeps nurturer afloat. Otherwise, just everybody's pain takes over. So leadership is like a necessary piece in order to swim in the field of all that and not drown. Yeah, I mean, we're all meant to be leaders one way or another, but I guess it looks very different for different characters. But for nurturer leadership doesn't have to look like, you know, go out there and speak and be on stage and stuff. Like that's maybe a different character, like maybe celebrity type or ruler type of a leadership. But they're different leadership. I mean, leadership is within yourself when you're talking to somebody and they're in victim consciousness instead of joining in and saying, oh, I know, that's so sad, it sucks when it happens. Instead, you go into, wow, I can feel your pain, but have you tried to look at it from a different perspective? That's leadership from a nurturer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. One more. Tatiana.
Hi, hi. Interesting, actually. I had a different question originally, but now I have an extra one. Do the other patterns then have a solution? You know how you said for nurture, leadership is a solution? Are we supposed to find that overall solution for?
Well, in a sense, I gave it to you guys in the very first Zoom. So like, if you look at what other one, like let's say,
the way to abundance part?
Yeah, it's in the Zoom number one. Like if let's say somebody's accumulator, that means they are in a not enoughness, which means that their solution would be to know that there's enough supply, right? And the investing in themselves is the way to do that, which could be financial or other time or whatever else. So putting themselves as a priority, their needs as a priority versus safety as a priority would be solution then for, let's say, accumulator. So yeah, it's from the first Zoom call.
Okay. And my original question was about, so for a while since the first lesson, I was thinking that my ass biter is my nurturer. But turns out there is another one, and it's the part, I had a freak out for 30 minutes last night when I was asking about the CRM. Okay, my freak outs are under 30 minutes. That's good. And then I had a download during the download. So actually I'm good, but I want to dig a little deeper why it happens. So my story before was that I am so resisting to technology and money details is because I am not left brain smart. Like I feel like puking about everything, artificial intelligence,
the connector,
artificial communication and all the sequences and email sequences and all that modern stuff. So, but what do you think is the overall thing? So I think it's because, so I thought it's because I'm so opposed to technology. And that was kind of the overall thing. But is it then the connector wound about not being left brain smart?
Yeah, it's a connector wound about not being smart in whatever way that in your culture when you were little was acknowledged as smart. So in Russia, it was acknowledged like you had to be smart in an electrical sense, essentially. If you are, then you were considered smart. If you were magnetically smart, you were not considered smart. But in some other cultures, magnetically smart is considered smart and electric smart doesn't matter. So it's cultural smartness that affects the connector, but whatever it is in a early childhood that was, you know, group opinion, as in this is what smart looks like and you don't fit in. So if you were having a difficulty with that piece of the more electrical smart, as in, you know, essentially like functioning like left brain stuff, then it would translate into not liking anything that would be of that type or would require that kind of energy, because it would prove that you're not smart and then you're not lovable or don't have supply or whatever was the story, or you're not included. See?
And you think it has nothing to do with the fact that, well, as a star seed with the whole left brain separation virus?
No.
Which is also a story, but you don't think that that's the where it's coming from?
No, because you can have a healthy electric. Electric is not evil, it's not bad. And healthy electric is actually necessary. No business can ever function with only magnetic. It wouldn't be a business, it would be a charity. So to have a business, you actually have to have electric. But to what extent, it depends. My policy on that is never automate relationships, automate procedures, but not relationships. So you can create as many CRM structures that create funnels and whatever else that automate procedures so that you don't have to physically sit there clicking emails, sending in sequence, because why? But you don't automate relationships, as in if they reply to you or if you check on them, like you actually connecting. So as long as that is there, then there's a balance and there's no problem. So that is actually more of a filter, I think, that you're putting on it from the story of electric equals bad because of the negative electric, and then that translated technology is negative electric. Technology is not negative electric. Technology just is. It could be utilized as a negative or positive, just like money, right? Money is you can use it positively or negatively. So hopefully that detangles for you.
So what would be then, just one quickie, what's the sentence to use, do you think, in this case? Because I got a download last night, and I think I actually deeply resolved it for myself. But what do you think from your perspective? I just want to see a different angle. How would you do the sentence to correct that?
For technology, you mean?
Kind of like leadership.
I'm supported by technology. Instead of anything that you're battling, it's actually something that feeds you. Use it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. All right. I think we're going to move into the next part. So I'm going to check if anybody's waving. If somebody is just dying to tell me something. No, nobody's dying. Okay. All right. So. Yeah, Shannon, what did you want to ask?
I just had a question. In the last question of that section was, how is your body, the bioelectric organism, is related to creation of abundance?
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered if you could address that.
It's in the videos.
It is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I just missed it. I'll watch again.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, so the next portion is about decision, okay? This is the part that tends to be very much eye-opening when we realize that we are 100% responsible for every single thing that is within our life, every single thing. And that includes internal climate. So if you're suddenly feeling annoyed, you're responsible for your annoyance. You're responsible for whatever it is that's allowing you to feel annoyed. Okay? If you're suddenly feeling bad about yourself, it's not the world that's making you feel bad. It's your choice about how you see yourself or the world that's then creating the feeling of you feeling bad about yourself, right? That goes for every single thing. So anytime we're having any kind of a feeling that is not something natural, not something that feels harmonious and good and joyful, which remember, happiness is kind of like baby's factory setting. Like we're meant to just be happy and joyful and feel alive and connected. And then whatever happens, you know, in our external environment, we have to be partially observer, partially participant, like I said earlier. But when that doesn't happen, and instead we fully dive into experiencer and we become whatever it is that we're feeling, that energy is a negative pattern that we choose. Because any kind of a pathway within our brains that we have created prior is not there kind of automatically. Is there automatically only because we're not driving? Okay, that's an important little clue there. So if your brain is designed to have automated systems and you are the conscious creator of what those systems look like, if you created a system when you were 5 years old and another one when you were 12 years old or something long time ago, those systems still in your brain. And whatever systems we have created, they kind of permanently there. But we can choose to run our electrical charge through them or not. We can choose to keep them in our library of automated responses or not. That is a choice. So anytime something happens and then we do something about it, so there's a link. When this happens, like a dog salivating when it hears the can of food opening, okay? This is biological organism, this is how we program. It takes 67 times of doing that same thing for it to become an automated program. That's what Solar Console says. I don't know why this many, but that's just what it is. 67 times, your system would have had to do exactly the same linkage of the two things. Once 68 time comes, you're not thinking about it anymore. Your body reacts before you can think. You know, like let's say you're in a kitchen and you're looking for your, you know, cup to drink your tea, and your hand, just as soon as you thought, I want to have tea, your hand goes to the right cupboard where the cups are. You're not thinking, oh, where are my cups? It's your body knows before you know. Same thing if you ever driven home and you don't know how you got there, but you are just somehow driving. That's, I mean, somebody drove that car. It didn't drive itself. I mean, eventually, but right now it's still us driving. That's because the brain recorded the pattern. You've done it enough times, and then you chose not to participate, but the brain knew what to do, and then your body followed the information of the brain. Same thing goes for something that creates a chemical response that's either positive or negative. Like, let's say, sugar addiction. When somebody had emotional response of, oh, I feel bad or sad, I want comfort, and instead of doing meditation or journaling, they chose a cookie. And they did that 67 times. Every time, a cookie or ice cream. So what do you think would happen on a 68th time? Do you think you're going to actually contemplate, should I have a cookie or not? No, you're just reaching out for the cookie because as soon as you feel bad, that's what your brain says to do. What happens when we try to resist that? When we try to resist that, the brain creates chemical response of saying, I'm not satisfied. What are you doing? We're not following the procedure. You know that if you feel bad and you have a cookie, you feel better. Why aren't you having a cookie? What's wrong with you? And then your brain creates the hormones that make you feel bad, as in stressed or nervous or frustrated or upset. And now you're feeling like, well, damn it, eventually I'm just gonna have the cookie. And then, oh, the relief, I feel so much better. That's because you gave the brain the thing that it wanted because it already pre-programmed, okay? That's how it works. The same thing goes for not just the cookie, but let's say, you know, heavier emotional responses. Like somebody who would be hearing a person with a loud voice telling them something. And let's say when they were little, that made it, maybe was a father that was yelling at them. And then the child learned that, oh, I need to hide. I need to like just be totally invisible and not say anything and just, you know, not show up because then daddy will not like hurt me. Okay, if that happens 67 times, by the 68th time, that child will be self-erasing anytime they hear loud noise towards them somehow. Somebody starts yelling, they start self-erasing. No thought involved. Now that child is a grown-up person who's saying, how come I can't stand up for myself? You know, at work, they telling me this thing, my boss is like that, and I should just say this, I should just say that, why can't I do that? That's because the brain pattern says, no, 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 that's not what we do. Remember, you stay safe by self-erasure. So what we want to do is look for the decision point within us that decided that. Like that's the part of taking the power back. Essentially what that does in the chemical sense is we're taking the pattern off the autopilot. Now we have the choice. Do we go there or not? Like with the cookie. Right? I'll go back to that example. So let's say you feel sad and bad and whatever, and let's say cookie is the first response, but you worked on that pattern before. So now it's not an automated pattern. You're now aware that, oh yeah, I know that when I feel bad, I want a cookie. Okay. So now you feel bad. You still will have the first response automated. I want a cookie, but now you don't even go towards the cookie. You don't even smell the cookie. You don't open the thing of cookies and look at them. You don't even know, you don't even buy cookies because you know you have a thing with cookies. So then what you're going to do instead is say, okay, how can I decide differently here? What if I decide to love myself instead, or whatever the issue was, and then I choose to make myself feel better? Now it's a different decision than decision to get a cookie, but we don't get to decide until we made the automated pattern into something conscious that we claimed responsibility for. And we're going to go into responsibility in the next lessons. But for now, I just want you to really get that nothing exists in your life as just happened. Every single thing is a decision and all of them are pre-programmed. Pretty much 90% of our daily operation, we run on autopilot. In every single thing, how you sit, like, you know, if somebody has a slightly crooked spine, one shoulder a little bit higher than another, they might not even recognize that they sit like this all the time. In the car, they sit like this on the table, on the desk. So their body habitually is doing it because it's comfortable, because it's programmed that that's the way to do it. But why is it that way? Well, maybe because when they were very little, they had a favorite chair, and that's when they felt safe, and they felt that if I sit like this, it's safe. So we have to claim the patterns that we're doing as our doing. If we keep looking at everything that happens in our life as, I don't know, this just happens to me, I don't know why I feel like this, anytime we go, I don't know, or how do I, we're giving up the authority to make the decision. Okay? So I don't know is the magnetic default. How do I is an electric default. So all electrics here, how many times have I gotten that? How do I do this? So how do I do that? Every time we do that, we actually give up the power because we're saying I'm not the one deciding it. When actually we're deciding, and decision is not a step-by-step process. Decision is a switch. If you ever seen the railroad tracks when, you know, the train goes along one and there's this thing that can click like that and suddenly the train goes on another track, whatever that's called, that intersection switch, that's what decision is. It's not a step-by-step process. It's literally this or that. Decision comes from the Latin word to cut off. And that's why so many people are terrified of a decision, because we made it conditional. If I cut it off, which means all other options don't exist and only this one exists that I decided, what if it's a wrong one? And then all hell breaks loose because I must be not lovable or whatever if it's a wrong choice. So we have all our stories wrapped around that, which is why we don't decide. But if you live your life deciding, you can accomplish anything you want. This is one thing that I was incarnated with, like I'm able to decide. My decision is completely free. So I don't run on automated patterns, which is why I'm able to do so many things and so effectively and efficiently. Not because I'm some sort of a, you know, superhuman, but because I literally decide. There is no waste of anything on the automated detour, ever. So if you want this kind of a efficiency in your life, and I don't mean like productivity from the mechanical standpoint, although for some of you that might be a good thing as well, but internally as well, in your body, in your health, in your connections and everything, so that life feels vibrant and amazing and radiant, decision is the key to that. Taking the pattern from the automated kingdom and putting it into conscious choice kingdom. We are 100% responsible for every single thing in our life, including how we feel. Okay, so you can see the I don't know and how do I? Look in your life where those things come up a lot, because those are the areas where you would be resisting deciding. That means long time ago, you have decided something else. You know, like, let's say if I say, well, how do I feel confident? Well, that means long time ago, you decided you're not confident. You decided to give up whatever it was that made you confident, because confidence was dangerous within your realm. So then the excuse of how do I keep supporting the decision that now became automated of I'm not confident. Do you see? And then a detour, well, how do I? And it loops right back into the same thing. And you can go over it again and again and again your whole life, unless you actually say, wait a minute, I choose that I'm confident. Not based on something external where I just decide I am. And thus I am. Okay? And the magnetic is, you know, that I don't know. That's the whole other component to that. I don't know how, like nobody told me. That helpless thing, that's a way how magnetic energy tends to give up decision making. It thinks that knowing is something other people have. You know, somehow they got it and like you didn't get it for some reason. When actually knowing is a choice. You can choose to be the person who knows, and then you know. You can choose to be the person who doesn't know, and then you don't know. So a long time ago somewhere, that person, the magnetic person, would have had to decide that knowing is dangerous. So then they decided they don't know. And then they can go back into, but I just don't know, but somebody didn't tell me, but how do I do this? Like all those little loops, that's how we keep ourselves ineffective in our spiritual journeys, because we repeat the patterns. Okay, so does that making sense for you? Do some head waving or something so I know. Okay, good job. All right, so what I would like you to do is let's pick somebody who didn't speak yet to look at that pattern, either the magnetic side or electric, or some of you might have both. And what decision is it protecting there? So let's look at that. That would be a good spot to dig in and see. So I don't wanna start naming you guys. So somebody who did not speak before, I'd like to hear from you.
Eugenia, it's Roman. I didn't speak before.
I don't see you, Roma.
I'm here.
Okay, there you are.
Start video. Hold on a second. Okay, what are we talking about?
We're talking about the decision of not something. So where is this part about either I don't know or how do I shows up in your life?
Oh, it shows up a lot in spiritual teachings questions. Sometimes I just can't figure things out, like identity, like the previous subject, previous class altogether. I had my mind was completely bouncing off the pages. I was listening to the Zoom. I couldn't understand what you guys are talking about. Like finally, I'm giving up. This is too much. I need to sleep on it.
Yeah, so that's an excuse, the giving up part. That's an excuse because that says, I give up because I just cannot know. I cannot understand. But the cannot understand is a story. Okay, so that means back somewhere was a decision made that says that somehow these things are too complex for me. And really that all goes back to receiving love. That love doesn't happen. I keep trying to figure out how to get it. I do it this way and that way and that way, and none of them seem to result in love. So I give up because I must not know how to do it. I must not do it right. Or I must not be able to figure it out. That's the story in there.
Maybe, but this is very little bit simplified. In my case, I do want to know. So my other side says, yeah, you will get to it.
You're mistaking the subconscious and the conscious. Obviously, your conscious wants to know. That's why you're here. I mean, So we're talking about the part of your consciousness that's not something you normally aware of, right? So we all here want to know, we all understand that in a bigger sense we're lovable, like we all got all that. But if we really got it, we would have had a different experience. So Shannon, that's by the way your answer there with the body. That's how body is involved. So if you look at the subconscious pattern, Roma. The subconscious one is the one that says love is unattainable unless I know how to get it, but I can't seem to get it. So that means I can't seem to figure it out. So it either can go into something wrong with me or it goes into something wrong with them who's not giving me love. See, that's your internal battle there. It's all wrapped around that particular issue. It's trying to get something by doing the right thing and then not getting it, so that translated in a child's mind as I must not be doing the right thing. And then it translated, well, I just don't understand.
So what's the idea here? I have to keep screwing up, messing things up and assume that I'm loved?
No, that would be the lower self story you just went to. The higher self version of that would be, I have love already. Instead of how do I get love, I have love already. And it has nothing to do with people or external circumstances at all. I have love, I am fulfilled. And then the main focus becomes, I am fulfilled. I feel it within me. I feel fulfilled. I am enough. Now with that, you go and interact with the world. At your job and the relationships and anything with money, when you do that from the place of already being enough, instead of trying to figure out how to get it, which implies separation and not having it, then the broadcast is different because now you're saying, I am enough, I already have it. I have all the abundance, all the wealth, everything, I have it because I am. And then when you show up in a world, your external reality starts to respond to a new energy broadcast. So let's say if you have a job and the job is not working really well, or it's not paying you as well, or something like that, and you're trying to figure out how do I make it work better, that's the separation older self with the negative decision. If instead that same thing is changed into, I'm enough, I'm wealthy because I am, because I'm connected to all life, I am. Money, no money, job, no job, completely irrelevant. I am wealthy. I already have. I'm not in need. Then you go to that job and you share that energy of, I am not in need. I'm awesome. I'm already connected. Then the job starts to reflect that to you. Somebody might hire you for a second contract, or somebody might raise your fee or give you something, I don't know, bonus or whatever, that you didn't necessarily ask for because you weren't trying to get it. See?
Kind of, yes. It's a long way for me, Eugenia. It's
that's also kinda, a story.
I can't. I understand, but I hear you. Okay, I understand this, but I still have to go back, talk to my boss every day, and I do make mistakes. But I'm okay with this. I will make mistakes, and he will correct me. But I don't depend on his love for me for that. That's what you're saying, right? I don't have
right.
to depend
I'm
on
that.
Right,
I'm saying it's not the circumstance, it's the perception of the circumstance. So that's, first of all, I want to make that clear. Because when we get too literal about the event itself, we can't do anything with it. Because now it's about like you and the boss. It's not. It's about you and the perception of what is going on. And then, yes, you are correct, Romo, because you can say, okay, I'm doing something, and let's say I made a mistake, and let's say my boss corrected me, but now you have a choice of what that means. It could mean you're a bad guy, or you don't know what you're doing, or the boss is bad, or whatever. Or it can mean just, okay, now I understand there's some different procedure to follow, I'm just going to do it differently next time. No biggie. We make it mean something, and it's up to us. That's the decision part.
But I had this I don't care situation I wrote about in Facebook before. This is a different I don't care. This is like, since you're telling us, okay, so none of this matters. It kind of, none of this matters and it does matter.
Yes.
So we have this.
Absolutely, both.
So at some point I'm like, all right, this none of this matters. I don't care. Why should I worry about it so much?
Yeah, right? That's the problem right there. You just linked care and worry. Two separate subjects. You can care deeply, you should never worry. See?
Don't worry, be happy.
Well, let's just say worrying is linked to separation and scarcity. You cannot worry if you're in abundance. While yes. caring is automatically in abundance. So we can care deeply, and as long as we have a boundary about it, there's no problem. Worrying is not caring, and so many human constructs here is that we mix them as if it's the same thing, and then even in language people say, like, you know, oh, don't worry about it, or oh, I worry so much about him, meaning I care about him. And it's like, no, those are two separate things. You can care about somebody or something you do, but not worry about it.
Yeah, and as being nurturer, I should care not too much. Care, but don't care
there
too much.
There is no thing as caring too much, because caring is actually outside of duality. So you can't care too much or too little. You just care or you don't. But you can care with a boundary, or you can care without one. When you care without a boundary, you overgive, or you merge, or you lose yourself. When you care with a boundary, then you respect yourself and at the same time another.
How long is it going to take me to get it all right, Eugenia?
It's actually not, yeah, it, a lot of it is the story there that is going to take a long time. So, you know, it's going to take whatever you decide it's going to take. If you decide it's going to be hard and it's going to take a long time, then it's exactly what it's going to be. If, on the other hand, you decide that hey, this is going to be easy. I'm going to be every day waking up with new realization, and this is going to be integrating itself into my life. And all I need to do is get out of my own way of the excuses and of all the negative thing, the judgment, and stay on the path. But then it will be easy. Then it will be easy. It's a choice.
Mm. I like that. Easy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome. This was a great example, Roma. Thank you. Because we got to see a very different pattern here. Dasha, okay, you are.
I kind of have a tail question to this. And it is not a very well-formed question yet, just because I just came up with it.
Just go for it.
But I'll form it. How far do we go into figuring out what happened? Let's say I am a person who has both. I don't know, and how do I? Both of them are mine. And I don't really have them about more or less all the life. I only have them about money. About money, I don't know anything. I cannot sell shit. I cannot, like money just stops everything.
There is where I would actually pause you and say what you just said. Notice with conviction you said that. Yeah,
I noticed.
That's the story and the excuse that defends itself. That is not true. You can sell anything you want, but you decided you can't.
Exactly. So this is my question. I'm sort of getting into all these investigations. It's very, very interesting. I love all the parts of it. But how far do I go? Like, at some point, I made the decision that not knowing is, like, safer than knowing. And only not knowing about money, not about anything else. Mm-hmm. Money, knowing about money is not safe. Mm-hmm. So being a Russian, obviously, I can see that it is culturally predetermined.
Yeah.
But like, do I go and find out the specific moment and who said it to me? Or like, is it a karmic pattern? Probably it is, if I came to this, right? Do I go into these, hold on, I don't know. Well, do I go into like past lives and see when? No,
okay. Let's pause you.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
We got it. No, it doesn't matter. Because do we want to look back and try to figure it out, or do we actually want to change it? So if we actually want to change it, then that's the whole point, really, because the figuring out in this case is actually the lower self wanting something, and it just goes into another cycle. But we actually just want to have it different, then no. The only thing you need to figure out is which decision I have made. And the decision you have made is knowing about money is unsafe. That's your answer. Nothing more is needed. Now you need a different decision, because that knowledge of money, knowing about money is unsafe, is the thing that was the automated driver.
Okay.
So what we wanted is to drag that driver from the automated into conscious choice area. You just did by naming it. Once you do that, you make a decision. It doesn't really matter how it got into the automated pattern.
So let's say like a person like me likes to dig in everything. Yes. So for me, many of the times I dig out really interesting stories behind it, and I kind of sort of get stuck there. I dug it out, but I didn't really change it.
Exactly. And that's actually one of the stories there too that you have, is that looking at everything from every angle very thoroughly, that's the only way to be safe. And that's also entertaining. And that's what life is all about. And if you don't do that, then life is boring. And then you don't know what to do, because then you just make cold decisions and it's just a straight line. And like, there's a lot there. All of that is a story.
Mm-hmm. But how can we just make a decision when we haven't really yet incorporated into our body? Like an example, sometimes you just like, you recognize your pattern and you can't fix it. It happened. And then you just grow bored with that pattern. You're like, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to fix it. And you just move on from that. So something happened, something anchored in the body at that moment that allowed you to release this addiction to not fixing it.
Right.
So if I decide to, it is safe to know about money, but it didn't anchor in me.
Exactly. Yet. It did not yet, because it did not get linked to the identity. So that's the part that we're talking about. And this is what we're going to do as we're going through the course, is that when you first you have to take something from unconscious to conscious. So we have to be aware of our excuses, aware of our broadcast stories. Okay. Once you are, then you drag that decision from the automated into conscious reality. Then you link that new decision to the new identity.
Okay.
And then you become or act only from that identity. I'll give you an example. Let's say you're not a smoker. You don't smoke. You don't wake up in the morning thinking, should I have a cigarette today or no?
No.
What would happen if somebody offered you a pack of cigarettes and say, there, it's free?
Nothing.
You just go like, whatever, right? Yeah. Thank you, but no thank you. Somebody smoking and they gave you one to, you know, get a puff, you would just be like, no thank you, because you're not a smoker. That's an identity anchored in the body. Shannon, there's your answer. So that's the anchor of the decision, right?
Okay.
So until it's linked to the new identity, the decision is just a thought, not a decision. Thought is not a decision. Decision is an alignment.
Got it.
Vertical cube, that's where decisions live. Thoughts, that's a level.
As soon as I link that decision to my identity,
yes,
this is when it anchors in the body.
Yep.
I got it. Thank you. Okay.
You are welcome. Good question.
Right. Eugenia, where did you just say decisions live?
Vertical tube.
Oh, vertical tube. Yeah.
Yep. Decisions live in the vertical tube. Mental thoughts live in the mental level. So when
yeah,
we think
great.
Something differently, that's not a decision.
Yeah.
Eugenia, I've been waving, but to no avail.
I don't see who you are.
It's Amy.
Amy.
Sandler.
I don't actually see you yet, so hold on.
Okay, no wonder I was...
Oh, there you are. Finally.
Feeling invisible, but now I've emerged. This is a clarifying question, and from the previous exercise and what you said that resonated when you said it's not about the thing, it's the perception of the thing. And so one of my flavors is just... of an excuse is around being tired. And so I'm wondering, like, there's a physiological feeling of tired, but then it becomes a story and then it becomes an excuse. And so I'm wondering, is it like there could be a physiological feeling, but it's about the story related to being tired, or does that become an identity? I'm not sure where tired fits into kind of the whole chain.
The identity says that if I'm vibrant, I have to do stuff I don't like, and then I get hurt or something happens, I get exposed. So then the story is written around that. Then the thoughts go into, oh, I should do this or I shouldn't do that. If I do this, I might be tired, or I wish I could do that. Then the emotion is, oh, I'm just so exhausted. This just sucks, I don't like it. And then the physical response is, I'm exhausted.
That's good.
Did I answer it?
Oh, you totally answered that. If I'm in the external environment or feeling tired, this will go back to the new identity is, so I need to reframe an identity around the, if I'm vibrant, I have to do stuff I don't like.
The decision there is to drag that pattern out onto the surface. So then you deciding that you are okay with not seeing tired as a reality, seeing it as a consequence of something else. So now you're free to change a different identity. Because you tend to take the tired as a fact of life when it's not. It's just the consequence of a particular pattern. Because you don't have a chemical, physical reason to be tired. You have more of a psychological reason to be tired. Make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, Mira is next. Hold on, I can't hear you yet. Go.
Hi, Eugenia. When you were talking about the decisions, I'm very good with the decisions about business, about moving, about doing my consulting. And I realized that I have areas in my life that I'm walking away from the decision not to make the decision. And this is kind of my hook up to walk away because I don't want to deal with this. How to measure the strengths of the decision or how to look for the decisions when make it, not make it, and being a decision maker in general.
Some decisions trigger your identity, some don't. Mm-hmm. So if, let's say, in a business, you have identity of confidence, you know what you're doing, you're, you know, expert in whatever it is your field is, then decision is not a problem whatsoever. There's no trigger, right? Mm-hmm. But if, let's say, it's in some area that you have more of a wobble there in your identity, like, let's say, I don't know, being lovable or being connected to or something else, now decision in those areas might be triggering, oh, it's dangerous. If I decide wrong, then something happens or something. So then there will be more avoidance. So yeah, decision is always linked to the identity. So if your business persona is confident, then there will be no problem with decisions. But if your, let's say, feminine side is not as confident, well, then she would probably have a little bit of a trouble with decision or maybe avoiding one. Does that make sense?
Yes, looking at electric, magnetic.
Mm-hmm. Electric. In your situation, yes, but it doesn't have to be. In your situation, right, but doesn't have to be. Could be two electric areas and then one person feels very confident and another one very not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Ksenia.
Masha.
Okay. Being very emotional, I have three abundance personality type and magnetic side, and it's making decision more difficult in terms of overcome emotional stuff, because I don't feel support of structure, like very emotional. When I try to work on my decision, I feel so much fear. I would like just to stop it, to drop it, don't think about it, go away.
Yeah, so in this situation, emotion has nothing to do with that. It's the identity that says there's right decision and there's wrong decision. If you just resolve that, you will have no problem with decision making, emotional or not. Because all the terror you're experiencing, Masha, comes from what if it's a wrong decision. If there is no wrong decision, because, hey, 100% possible, 100% of the time, there's no right or wrong. Anything is okay. You can decide, and then you can decide something else tomorrow if this thing didn't quite click, and it's okay. Whatever happens, it's just a choice. But when we make that choice into right or wrong, and especially if you were rewarded for the right and severely punished for the wrong, it translates into, I can't make a decision at all because, oh my God, if I do, what if? And anytime we in a situation where we're avoiding decision making altogether, it's the fear of the right and wrong thing. Okay. And by the way, I'm very emotional that you said, that's a story. That's a decision. You decided at some point that you're that. You're actually very intellectual too. You have a great capacity for high conceptual understanding of reality and many, many, many other things. So it's not a correct label to say I'm very emotional. It's a label you chose because it was more convenient for that automatic pattern. You see where I'm going with it.
Okay, it's a great clarification for me because I understand now my problem is deep inside, I have fear to make wrong decision.
Right.
Even I was looking in decision, particular decision, I was feel good about it. But deep inside, I have this identity, which is afraid to make decision because it's afraid to be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's fake it for a moment. Let's say if you raise your right hand like this, then bad things will happen. If you raise your left hand, it's very good. Now I say, you know, raise the right hand.
Okay.
Yeah, but you feel a little bit, right? So yeah. What happens if I say either hand? Doesn't matter. God loves you anyway. You know, the universe thinks you're awesome. It's all great. Either hand. But if you go this way, door number A opens. This way, door number B or something. So, okay, now raise whichever hand you want.
Okay.
You see, it takes that drama of, which one, off. And then it's more like, well, what does your intuition tell you? What does your body tell you? What does your heart tell you? Because if you're more on the emotional side, it doesn't mean you are emotional. It just means you have more fluid energy available for you. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. All right, let's see some other pages here. I saw someone else. Anybody waving at me? Try again? No? Hollis?
Okay. I kind of got down to my identities, which are pretty clear in most cases. It's not safe to be me, and I am not lovable. The thing that this victimizer cycle is really present. I mean, it's been present my whole life. And it seems to be getting a little bit more intense, which I feel there's a breakthrough coming, but it just keeps to be this thing that I run into, and I'm not, it's in my relationship. So my solution is just to leave, to remove that person from the situation so I'm not triggered, and then I don't have to, then I can be free and work on myself. And
yeah, that's not a solution. That's right. Removing the trigger.
Right. So
the issue still remains, just the trigger of the issue is gone.
Exactly. So staying in this, despite all of the stories that have created so much drama and friction, just trusting, I guess my question is trusting in just focusing on the identity. Obviously trying is in the moment to not create more drama and wreckage and all that. Are you saying that if we truly change that identity, that all of these things I won't get triggered anymore, essentially?
Yeah, this is a good question, actually, for everybody to hear the answer to. What happens when we change the identity? First of all, our internal experience changes. Second, external becomes clear, not always changing, clear. So let's say in your situation, you will then know if you are to stay or to leave. Right now, you don't know. You're reacting.
Well, it's the feeling of anger that I mean, I can find it anywhere. And I'm just like, I'm so happy. And then all of a sudden, nope, right back to anger.
So where are you trapped?
In a blame. I'm always blaming, mm-hmm. not taking responsibility for... Well, intellectually, because I could say, oh, I know it's my fault and I created this, but blah, blah, blah.
No, so, it's not your fault, but you did create it.
Yeah.
Not the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, fault is a blame. Somebody's fault, that's a blame. Nobody's fault, anything, no, nobody's fault. There's no such thing. We just go with our own stories and stuff happens. But it's still a responsibility of the person who chose to create the experience. So what are your types, Hollis?
Connector, celebrity, and nurturer.
Connector, celebrity, and nurturer. Okay. Well, yeah, the connector part is the one that wants to connect as the real self. Uh-huh. And when she doesn't get to do that, because long time ago she decided that connect as the real self is dangerous, mm-hmm. then what is she going to connect with? Either the fake self, some sort of a mask uh-huh. that somebody else wants to see or whatever, or not connect at all.
Yeah.
What is that going to build up inside? Probably a boatload of resentment and anger, uh-huh. which eventually, like contents under pressure, would be like rage that would want to explode because, damn it, I need to connect like a real me, right? So there's the cause of the rage, of the anger. So if that's something that's a repetitive pattern, that means there's a repetitively something in you that's not fully showing up in the way that you feel authentic to you. It's not about how other people see you or whatever. It's something about, I don't know, maybe expressing yourself differently, maybe just allowing certain things to flow instead of having to do something about it. Like whatever your patterning is there, but something that is truly not truly you that needs to come out. So look at like in any situation when you're at home, let's say, and ask yourself kind of in intervals, like every half an hour, if I could do right now whatever I wanted in this situation, that's still being responsible, you know, not like letting your kid unattended or something, but like, you know, within the parameters of what you got, if I could do right now what I wanted, what would that look like? And is this my lower self-desire or my higher self-desire? You know, like, let's say, I don't know, if you have a child and you're babysitting and your lower self says, oh, I'm just exhausted, I want a glass of wine or something. Well, is this a lower self-desire or the higher self-desire, right? Probably lower self. So what would actually be a good thing there that still would be authentic? Maybe actual thing would be to have a glass of juice and really, I don't know, lie down on something while your kid is playing there instead of sitting and watching her or something. So it's a minor adjustment. Like, you're still doing the responsible thing, but you get to do it your own way. That's the celebrity part. She needs to come out and have a, you know, celebrity moment herself.
Yeah, you totally answered all of my doubt, because I can see it happening, like if I take care of myself in that moment, which is essentially just breaking the pattern and do something different, it breaks the circuit, and then right. I'll see that taking care of myself, connecting with myself, is actually, it doesn't matter what he's doing.
Right
okay yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you are welcome. Okay, somebody who didn't speak before, one more person. I don't want to name names. Come on, people. You know who I mean. Heidi McGill, you're next.
Okay, this is hard for me, but I was curious about, is it possible to have two identities, or is it just one that would potentially encapsulate both?
Yeah, it would be one that will encapsulate both, but you can still have two sort of self-identities that are very obvious to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I have safety and worth, which is a lot of people's. But then when I was looking at the excuses, I kind of had this aha that all of my excuses were kind of having this flavor of projection of authority. Mm-hmm. So then so I've been noticing how much of that victim kind of piece comes up for me.
Yeah, you can see how they can be connected, because if I'm in authority, then I'm not safe. But if I give up the authority, I'm safe, but then I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
And that's probably the capstone.
So then that would be my identities.
The negative identity that you're dragging to the surface to see which decision you made long time ago, where you decided that it's not safe to be your own authority.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. All right. So now what I want to do is go into one more thing before we're done. And I know we're going at 2 hours again, but, you know, if you can stay, awesome. It's the stories about money. So that was part of your homework in there somewhere. And the decisions that we made that made us have a particular belief in connection with money, they come from certain identity that's probably that big identity that we just come up with, but then somehow out of that, there's a branch for money as well. So stories about money always have some sort of a lower self benefit, something that your lower self is getting out of being out of abundance, okay? Because remember, abundance is oneness. It's your divine right to be wealthy. Like, God is wealthy and you are God, which means you are wealthy automatically. So we're meant to be wealthy. Money is a part of the form of wealth. So is being healthy, so is being in well-being. Those are all parts of wealth. So when you are in abundance, you are wealthy, which means then you materially will also create more wealth. And the lower self is the part of us that's in separation. So it's not in abundance. It's in some scarcity mode, because of some decision we made and some identity that we have in relationship with that. Okay, so the lower self has the benefit there in keeping you in the negative story about money because it gets something out of it. You know, like for example, if I have a lot of money, I will have to manage the money and that's too hard and then it will just prove me that I'm stupid, so I better not have a lot of money. Or if I have a business that's very well functional and I have lots of clients and I will have to work so hard and then I'm already working hard, so if I just add one more thing, I'll just die, so then I can't have business that's well functional, so then I have no clients. You see where the lower self benefit here is, right? So I want you to look at that and let's have one person or two maybe mention something on their money story. Carl, do you want to go? You're still muted. Hold on. There you go.
Okay. Hey. So here's what I captured for the accumulator. I just said it's like it's never enough. And so even if I got a big bonus, I would maybe celebrate for about 10 seconds and then I'd be focused on the next thing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like always trying to like work and not, you know, not afraid to work hard, but it's like sometimes working too hard for what I do get and then not appreciating it, right?
Well, it's working for the wrong reason. It's not about working hard or not. It's that why bother working at all if no matter what you do, it's still never going to be enough, right? So it's kind of like you're stuck in that cycle of if there's never enough, then there's never accomplishment in a sense, right? Like accomplishment is a result, like you get somewhere, right? So if you don't get somewhere and instead you keep going and going and going, and isn't ruler one of yours too?
Maverick.
Oh, Maverick. Yeah, well, with a Maverick, it still makes sense as well because of the entrapment thing. So I'm trapped if I don't have enough and accumulator says, well, I never have enough, so then I got to keep going, right?
Yeah, yeah. And with the Maverick too, it's like, okay, am I taking a risk from the lower self side or the higher self side, right? And when I've taken risks from the lower self side, it always turns out bad, right? When I take a risk from the higher self side, it's like, that's great. But so anyways, that was great feedback for me. And then the last one is the nurturer just over giving, probably more so to my kids and my family and not, you know, not letting them kind of mature into their own unique identity, right? Or I don't know how to say it, showing them I care through what I give them, right? Which,
so what's the lower self benefit here?
Being needed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the lower self benefit on the first one? Never having enough.
The lower self benefit of never having enough. I don't feel good enough ever. I'm never going to feel good enough about how much money I have, right? So,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It just perpetuates that overall capstone identity, right? Because if you actually, I don't know, if you had, I don't know, $1 million and it felt, wow, I got this. Even if, let's say, next year you made $1 million or $2 million or $20 million or $40 million. But if you celebrated $1 million, you would have had to be enough for just that moment when you celebrated it, right? So that's why there's such a low tolerance for celebrating what you actually got, right? And it doesn't matter if it's $1 or $1 million or $20 million. It's like the range is completely irrelevant. It's when you claim that it happened, you have to take it in, hence the enoughness part in that moment, right? So if the lower self says, no, we can't be enough because we already decided we're not, then how do you ever be satisfied with the income, right? So that's good. You got it.
Good.
Yeah. All right. Let's see someone else who did not speak. John McKee, let's do you. And then Andrea, I'll get to you.
Virginia.
Hi.
Okay, so I just had a realization over there. So my first one is Alchemist. So my story is I have judgment about money and what it says about me, but it says, and then I was just looking at one of my wounds is a misuse of power. And that, so if I have money, it means I've misused my power. I've taken advantage of people. That's one of my stories.
Yeah, that's a very, very good component there of how your lower self benefit fits in, because the lower self says you have to be a good person. The good person is someone who does not use people. And then you already have a story that says there's not enough money in the world. So if I take some, that means I'm taking away from somebody else. All complete and total illusion, because there are plenty of money in the world. Money is illusion anyway, and we can all have as much as we want. It's not a limited supply. But because of that story, then it translates into, if I make money, if I bring in, then I've taken it from someone else, and hence I'm a bad person, and that's why I can't have it.
Right. It's always felt like that. Yeah. And then as the nurturer, my story is, I believe if I had more money, I'd have to give it away, because I don't deserve to keep it.
Yeah, that's the leaky bucket. Nurturers always have that syndrome of a leaky bucket. Nurturers are actually able to get paid well, or if they have a business, to generate money. Nurturers are not usually poor people. Nurturers are usually able to generate, but they never keep it, because of the story tends to always go away.
Right. Okay. And then, the romantic, my story is that I spend the money irresponsibly, and in that, I can feel loved and appreciated because I've given myself things, but it's not always responsible. But so then I live in the discomfort of having overspent.
Right. And it's not trusting yourself.
Right. Right.
That's the lower self benefit there. Because if you trust yourself, you actually have to love yourself.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Good. Great assessment. You got it.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Andrea, let me find you. I promised you're going to be there. There you are.
Uh-huh. This is my favorite topic, the money stories. It's really what is top of mind. I took great comfort from the soul contract of ruler to innovate, achieve, and empower wealth with grace and ease. And I look very much forward to embodying that. So there's, I guess, a little bit of a question of why that has felt so elusive, although what's interesting is that I have never wanted for having the financial abundance. It's just not generated by me. Mm-hmm. So it's partner, family, whatever, it's always there when I need it. That's a accumulator, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even for my own purposes and for generating on my own, I tend to have it when I need it, but not in the vision that the ruler would like to see.
So you look at the identity there, something there about, what is ruler? There's empowerment, right? So ruler is powerful.
Yes.
And ruler is the one who leads. Ruler is the one that empowers others and has something to then build the empire with.
Yes.
And you know how there are a lot of the lower self stories about why you shouldn't lead, why you shouldn't be powerful, why you can't and all that. So from that, we'll then connect to the money thing, because if you're a ruler, you're the one who makes it. That means you actually have to be responsible grown up that does that. And there's all that thing about like, oh, what if I do it wrong? What if I don't do it a certain way, whatever. So then it puts you into a position of my guides are showing me. It's like a little ant versus a, big
Goliath.
So like you meant to be the big thing and you're like becoming a little ant, and then you work hard. Doing all the right things, you work hard. And then you wonder, why is it not resulting in the empire? Mm-hmm. Because you're not being the empire builder. You're being the ant, right? Yeah. So that's where the identity thing is. The empire builder is actually a different identity.
Yes, and I see that the identities that I am am deciding are the clear, undistorted, I am enough, and the clear, undistorted, I am connected. And I am safe, accumulator. So here's the question. When you mentioned before, we link this decision to our identity. Mm-hmm. Do you mean that we link that decision to the clear, undistorted identity? You're not talking about the identities we're discovering now that we are seeking to...
I meant both, because first you have the negative identity, and out of that, the negative story, which at some point got automated by a negative decision. So we drag that decision onto the surface. Now you make a different decision, and that different decision is linked to the new identity.
And it's like a bridge from one to the next.
Exactly.
And then I know you say that you just do it. And I loved what you and Tatiana were saying. That's great. That there's no, you know, it doesn't have to be.
It's not a step-by-step process.
It doesn't have to be fast or slow. Those are all stories. It can be like right now.
It could be instant.
But do you have any more tips or tricks as far as how there's a story, how do I, right?
Yeah, it's a story. Yeah. And in the second lesson, the meditation of your movie theater.
Yeah.
You know how I keep saying embody it?
Yes, embody. Yes.
Yeah, this is not a mental exercise. This is like, I feel it. This is what the texture is on the clothes I'm wearing. Mm. This is what it feels like on my phone when I'm checking my bank account. And this is how I feel when I see the number that just clicked in there or something. Like, so, you're making it so real that in that moment, your body is living that.
Well, and let me ask you this one last thing, which was when you had said that in the thread and I kind of got that idea, I realized that any of my thoughts about money were still kind of tracing too much back to the I am not enough stories or I don't know how. So I actually was trying to connect like the feeling I have when I'm walking through the forest. Uh-huh. And there's no question that I'm enough. I feel amazing. I feel connected. I feel enough. Mm-hmm. I feel like there is no higher experience that I could be having than that. Can I take that feeling into a money story?
Absolutely. Just add the money in a more literal sense too. So for example, like you're checking.
Money and trees.
Well, maybe, let's say, checking the amount of money in your bank account. I'm being like literal here. While feeling the forest and how amazing it is. And then connecting the two feelings until they feel the same.
That's amazing. Okay, thank you.
Yep, you are welcome, dear. All right.
Eugenia, do you have time for one more
one
general question?
Yep.
Okay. This is kind of about me, but also just about the broadcast. So I've been looking at the long-term broadcast. So let's take an example of me or maybe another person who I was practicing this stuff like 20 years ago, right? Abraham Hicks. You just feel the way you want to feel. You kind of think about it. You've written it down. And then I was manifesting stuff. And it was way better than what I even thought about, because the feeling, I was looking back on this, the feeling was really great all the time. And so what happens when you talk today about how it could get harder, so then the excuses get stronger, when a person is vibrating at these different places along the way, when they keep clearing themselves of their deep, deep stories and their deep, deep patterns and all that, they're clearing, clearing, clearing for all those years. Then when they go to try to create stuff, I think a while ago you told me, oh, now your soul is creating. So you got to let go, just let go. Your soul's creating. So where does that work when somebody who's homeless wins the lottery, or, they may not be able to hold it because of their broadcast?
That's exactly it. They win the lottery because in their soul contract, there was an option of allowing themselves to experience something as a shock, and because of their karmic pattern, they will not hold it, but they will learn something by having a point of reference.
So there's stuff in the soul contract that kind of bypasses the vibrational countenance. It bypasses the puzzle.
No, it doesn't bypass. It's winning a lottery is a very particular thing versus, let's say, somebody choosing to have a business that generates the same $43 million. It's a big difference. So, something like a lottery would have to be in a contract, something like a business. Anyone here can make a business that generates $43 million, but you would have to actually do something to be the person who can do that.
Okay, so let's take the lottery example, because a lot of people who say follow Abraham Hicks, they figure out how to win the lottery. A lot of them don't, but a lot of them do. Is it that they have that soul contract and then they find that kind of way to up their broadcast just enough to get that lottery win? You see what I'm saying? Or the business?
I don't know those people, so I can't tell you on the examples that hypothetical. I have no idea. Maybe they all do. Maybe somebody who follows that person only attracts the people who want this kind of a thing. I don't know.
Okay, well, you can answer for my example when you told me a long time ago, hey, now your soul is doing
it. Yeah, because you needed to get out of the way. See, what happens when we go through a particular cleanup, we are in certain identity. That identity vibrates certain way. Then let's say if you're choosing to investigate something painful, something darker, you actually vibrate differently and differently and differently. So at some point when you get to the root cause of something, you might be vibrating pretty low at that frequency, but that's when we actually need to let go and allow the river of life sort of to take us. But then at some point you come back to being a conscious creator. So trying to be a conscious creator from the place where the frequency is very low doesn't work. So here I'm teaching you guys how to raise your frequency to get to a different point, and the different identities have different frequencies. So all the identities that we're looking at that are negative identities that we've been living our lives through, those are the ones that frequency-wise would be vibrating lower, slower, and less harmonious than the identities that we're creating that are new ones.
Yeah, okay, I get it. That's great. So when the switch happens and then the person starts on a new identity, it's because they kind of are starting over in some particular area of their identity, which we're doing here in this class again.
That's because they build up enough courage to hold a different voltage.
Okay, great. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Mira, did you have a question?
Yes. Yes. Eugenia, can you comment, please? Because for us, for people who came from the former Soviet Union, the abundance with money, it was always connected to being a thief. It's bad. If you have a lot, if you have a little bit more than the average, you are already bad.
Yeah, that's the story of the Soviet Union, but it's still a story.
Yeah.
So what's there to comment? It's a story. You can choose a different.
What I realize that it's still sitting in me after so.
Right. So that's more of like we have stories that are personal. We have stories that are cultural, religious, planetary even. So let's say New Age community has a story that it's not spiritual to have money. And that's why so many people do spiritual work and don't get paid. The Soviet Union had a story that nobody has money because that's how you are a good person. But if you have money, that means you stole it somewhere. So you're a bad person. That's a cultural thing. And every culture, every religion, there's all sorts of different things. And when we come into that family or religion or a culture, we take on that story or not. That's a decision. So that means at some point when you were little, you decided, as you're saying, that story feels like it's still a little bit in you. Obviously not a lot, but a little bit somewhere in there. That's because that is a decision that at some point you as a child made, that that's what the world reflected to you. So you said, oh, okay, this is how it is. So I'm choosing to follow those rules. And I always say there are no rules unless you make them yourself. So all these external rules, they're universal laws, that's different. But as far as rules, no, we make up the rules. So you can make different rules than somebody told you the rules are, and then you will succeed according to your own rules, right? So that's how it's always possible. Like there would be one person is doing things completely differently and able to generate incredible wealth when everybody else are not. And it doesn't always mean that they are good or bad. It just means they follow different rules. Now, they might also have a bad, you know, moral code. That's possible. They might be stealing. But they also might not be. And they still could be generating wealth.
Okay. Thank you.
You are welcome. All right. Anybody else on the money story? And then we're going to go. So any one more person? If Ryan, you waited till the last second.
Yeah, just a quick question. So with respect to our broadcast and our soul path or contract, so in the case of manifesting, changing our broadcast or frequency, manifesting and, directing our energy on something that we want to obtain or achieve, that still has to align with the soul contract or our soul path, correct?
It has to align with identity. You had a lot of concepts in there. Manifesting, that's the last part of the broadcast. So you have identity, you have a story, you have a thought, you have an emotion, you have manifesting. The thing I call environment or behavior, that's the manifesting part. So that's what people talk about. But everybody always fixates here, like I want a new car, or I want a better job, or I want an island. And this is where the energy is focused. But if the identity says I can't have a car, job, or an island, this will not manifest. If on another hand, you look through this chain of whatever you have now versus whatever you want to manifest here, maybe it's an internal emotional state or something, it doesn't have to be a thing physically, whatever that is. Whatever you want this to be, the manifestation, you have to trace it back through the negative broadcast. Like, where are you falling off the horse here? Like, what's not creating it, right? Because if somebody here says, let's say, I am joyful, that's my identity, well, then the result will be they actually will be joyful and not so bothered by other people being in whatever behavior they are. But if their identity is my happiness is contingent on people being considerate, when people are not considerate, then what do you think is going to be the outcome, right? The outcome will probably be being angry all the time or frustrated or something like that. So that's the, if you want to manifest something, that's part of like why we're doing all of this. We'll get there to the sixth week, but that's the whole journey.
Okay.
Does that answer it?
I was just more curious as to, you know, what is possible for us given our, you know, soul contract or soul path in this particular lifetime versus maybe things that we want that may not align with that.
Well, the I and we in this sentence, you're asking about yourself, that's the ego asking. Okay. Ego is asking what is possible for me, as in the soul decided for me, so what do I get to have? Yeah, so really what's possible for you is whatever you decided, but you in that sentence is the soul. Ego doesn't always get to have what ego wants. Like, let's say ego might want an island, but the soul says you get to have a beautiful environment to live in, and it's an apartment that has flowers around. So it's like you still get to have the experience that you might be craving, but it might not look like what the ego personality wants. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Even the same thing like with the winning the lottery. I mean, that's somebody can say, oh, I want to win the lottery, but really they just feeling like they're not able to generate income, so they want it to come to them externally. Well, that's not going to be beneficial, right? So then the soul would not allow that person to have that unless it's part of the contract to actually have and lose in order to learn something. See?
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, I understand.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
You are welcome. All right, guys. Well, here we are. This was definitely interesting. I think we learned a lot.
Yeah, good job.
Yay. So, good job to all the brave, the ones that spoke. And next time I want to hear the ones who are hiding in the background, because at some point everybody needs to speak.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
For 2 hours.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Bye.